I was completely clueless about the world of technology. I almost didn't write a book because I thought, I'm not a tech person, right? The idea to go back when I lost my job, it wasn't even a question of go back looking for another job. Like, I was like, I don't even want to go through this anymore because there's no guarantee that any job I get will be safe.
A huge congratulations, Genies. We've reached our first milestone. Can you believe we've reached 120,000 views on this channel? Thank you so much for your support. But the interesting part, which is also concerning, is that 96.2% of our views come from non-subscribers. Our goal is to get that number to 50%, and we can do that with your help. So if you haven't subscribed to this channel, please do so. If you like this conversation that we're about to have, or have liked any video that we've put out, please subscribe to the platform, because when you subscribe and our channel grows, we're able to bring you bigger and better names that can help you transform your life and your business. Welcome back to Access Genie, the podcast that opens doors to success in the world of entrepreneurship. Today's guest is Nikki Verd, or as I would like to call her, the queen of pivoting. When she got retrenched, she was able to build herself up to being one of the leading voices in the world of technology. She is an author, she's a coach, and a speaker. Let's get into it. Nikki, I've been trying to get you onto the podcast for a while now. You're always somewhere in the world traveling and speaking and doing all of the work that you do. Yet you are also able to write a book in the midst of all of that, the book titled Disrupt Yourself or Be Disrupted. Why, Nikki? Why this book?
Wow, that's an interesting question. By the way, thank you for finally having me on the podcast. I have also been looking forward to coming here for such a long time, for as long as the podcast has been alive, actually. But I think that our timing just did not, the timing wasn't, you know, on our side. When you were available, I wasn't available. When I was available, you were not available. Yeah. But I'm finally here and I'm so excited to be on the platform. Well done on the podcast,
by the way. Thank you.
Yes, you know, the book, wow, Disrupt Yourself or Be Disrupted. It's quite a story, and I don't know where to start from. And it's a story I've told so many times, though, for people who know me or who have been following my story or my journey. Many people have they've heard the story, maybe not the full story, but they are, you know, familiar with my story. I used to work in the corporate world, and I had these dreams to climb the corporate ladder to the very top. I don't know what the last ladder is, but I have those dreams, right? Like most people, like, hey, let's climb the corporate ladder, let's win. But for me, that dream was cut short, you know, because one day I went into work and my boss called me in for what I thought was a meeting to brief him with what has been happening. And by the end of that meeting, I was jobless. You know, when I walked into the office that morning, the look on his face, I was like, okay, did I do something wrong? You know, when someone looks at you and like, this is not a normal look, like something is wrong. But I couldn't really tell just from that look what exactly was wrong. So I stood there and he really didn't say anything. He just sat there looking at me. I'm by the door waiting. Like normally he'd be like, sit down. So eventually he was like, he pointed to the chair I should sit. And I sat down and I'm like, okay, something is definitely wrong. And I could feel my heart pounding against my chest, right? And I'm thinking, what did I do? I'm trying to scan my mind quickly. Did I do something while he was away? Why is the boss like acting different? So eventually he said, there are some changes that are happening within the organization and they have been wondering how to tell me. I'm like, okay. But he says, there's no better way to tell me than to let me know that my position will no longer be needed because there's restructuring happening. And those words, it hit me like a train moving on high speed because I did not see retrenchment coming. I didn't see layoff coming. My boss used to tell me plans like 5 years ahead. You know, Nikki, I think we're going to do this, we'll do that. And just one morning, it was gone. you know? After he said that, he carried on with the whole conversation of what could happen and how they were willing to write for me recommendation letters if I was looking for that to help me get a new job. And I really did not hear most of whatever thing he was saying after that because I was in shock. Like, hey, did I just lose my job? And so that was really the beginning of disruption for me, so to say, even though at the time I didn't term it as disruption. I didn't even know what disruption was. Yeah. But that was the beginning of disruption for me. And so I left that day and the following weeks and the following months, to say those were some of the most devastating periods of my life would really be an understatement. Mm. I was broken. I was shattered because, again, I had no plan B. I didn't see retrenchment happening. I didn't think this would happen to me, right? And at the time I thought like, hey, I'm too young for this. Like, retrenchment happens to old people. That was my mindset, though. Even now I know better, right? I'm thinking retrenchment is something that happens to old people. You know, when you're young, you're vibrant, you're passionate about what you're doing, then your position is sealed. And I was all of that. I was really passionate and I loved what I was doing at the time. But in a moment, it was all gone. So as time went on, the pain and the frustration I was feeling translated into some sort of curiosity, which is when I talk to people today, I tell people the power of curiosity, like just become curious. It can lead you down some interesting path. And so I became very curious about technology. No, let me not put it technology. I became very curious about retrenchment. How do organizations continue to thrive when they let go so many people, right? Because in my case, because I was retrenched, it's like when I turn on the radio or on the TV, it was almost like wherever I go, I would hear news about retrenchment. It jumped on me constantly. It's like when you buy a car, you start seeing a particular make of car everywhere. So because this whole retrenchment thing is sitting on my subconsciousness, perhaps, the news about it consistently showed up. And that was what drove my curiosity, like, oh, so this didn't just happen to me. Apparently, this is like the new trend. This is happening everywhere. And there were some organizations that were announcing retrenchments, like laying off about maybe 2,000 to 5,000 employees in the period of like 3 years. So when I heard such announcements, I was like, how will they survive if they let go of that many people, you know? And I throw myself on the internet. I remember typing how organizations continue to thrive when they let go so many people. You know, now I'm curious about how organizations continue to thrive. I'm curious about how is my boss coping without me? Like, I don't know how this guy is coping without me. So I threw in those words on the internet. And for the first time, I came into contact with concepts like automation, artificial intelligence, robotics, all of these things that I was not aware of prior to that, right? And I'm realizing that there are processes that used to be done by humans that are now being done by machines. And I was very fascinated by that. I was like, oh, wow, there's a whole new world out here that I was not aware of, clearly, you know? I mean, the first time I saw the word artificial intelligence, it boggles my mind, like, there's artificial intelligence? I don't know one intelligence. I don't know what it's called though, but artificial? I got really, really, really intrigued by that term, artificial intelligence. And so I kept digging myself into that rabbit hole. Like, okay, what is this? What does it entail? How does it impact us? How does it impact the new world of work? And now, remember, I'm jobless now. So I have a lot of time in my hands. I can dig as much as I want from the internet, right? So these things kept jumping on me. And I decided to start writing about it on social media. So I wasn't just like having this information and keeping it to myself. So I started writing about it on Facebook. I wasn't on LinkedIn at the time like I am now, but it was on Facebook. So I'm writing about this stuff on social media, and I realized that people are intrigued about what I'm talking about. Like, oh, Nikki, what is this? Oh, the impact of technology. Oh, and they're asking me questions as though I'm the expert in the field, and I'm clueless, right? So I'm seeing people I respect asking me questions about technology. And it gave me so much courage. I'm like, oh my God, I'm not the only clueless person out here about this whole change is happening. So I'm like, hey, but you are in tech. If you're asking me this, I should be coming to you for some of these questions. Like, no, but Nikki, some of the things you're writing are really interesting. So I want to know more. So at some point I thought to myself, I think someone should write a book about this. But at the time I was like, that someone cannot be me. I mean, there's no way that someone could be me. But I had that wish that someone would write a book about this. And so I just kind of put the book thing aside and just kept writing on social media. And then it evolved from there. I started my blog, started blogging about it, I think in 2017 or 2018. So now I'm writing articles about this and posting on the internet. And, you know, when an idea has taken hold of you, if you don't like do it, you sort of become a little bit miserable. So the idea to write a book would not leave me. But I came up with all sort of excuses why I don't qualify to write a book. I'm like, you need to be really smart to write a book. I don't think I'm that smart. That's what I'm telling myself. I'm like, I don't think I speak proper English. I don't think my English is good enough to write a book. I'm giving myself all of these excuses why I don't qualify to write a book. I'm like, I'm not an academician by any stretch of imagination. Like, it's people who are really educated that should be writing books, right? That's what I've always thought about all this. And I heard that someone wrote a book. Like, that must be really smart. And now it is right at my doorstep, knocking at my doorstep, like giving me sleepless nights. And I'm giving it all the reasons why I don't qualify to write the book. And I remember going to a friend of mine and asking, hey, do you think I can write a book? And he laughed and looked at me like, what are you talking about? You can do anything you want to do. You're a very smart woman. Oh, okay. I'm thinking, all right. Then he's like, why are you asking? I'm like, I'm thinking about writing a book, but I feel like I'm not yet sure, you know? So, but nonetheless, that response from him and from other people gave me the courage to put something together. And I thought, what better title than Disrupt Yourself or Be Disrupted? Because here I was minding my business and my boss literally disrupted my life. So that's a very long answer to why the book.
Yeah. But Yeah. How was your life disrupted? If you can take me back to that time in your life and the months following that retrenchment.
Disrupted in every sense of the word. There were so many emotions I was going through that it was even hard to keep up. There was fear, anxiety. Anxiety was the order of the day. I remember I would literally wake up shaking because I'm like, how am I going to survive, you know? And there was a lot of crying. So many emotions that I did not even see how, prior to publishing the book, I did not even see, or even prior to actually having the mind to write the book, I did not see how I was going to survive immediately when the retrenchment happened or the layoff happened, right? Because I was just in complete shock. How am I going to survive? And I remember I was driving at the time and the first thing was sell the car, which I did, and tried to put money in some scheme, which I was scammed. There was some sort of scheme. I don't even remember what it was in South Africa. It was everywhere. If you put money, you're going to make so much money. And so I sold the car and I put money in that whole thing. Okay, I think this is the first time I'm telling this story.
Yeah.
And it was gone. Completely.
How much did you put the money in? How did the scheme work?
I don't even remember the details, believe you me. I just know that whatever came from the car, I got all of it got lost in that scheme. So whatever money that I had, I could fall back on, it was gone, right? Okay, Nikki, what next? You have to pay rent, you have to feed the kid. I'm a single mom at the time. It was exactly 1 year after my divorce that the retrenchment happened. So I'm like, I'm out here with two kids on my own, no support whatsoever from whoever, and I'm facing this, right? So it was very difficult. So I thought to myself, what do I do? And I remember going to downtown Johannesburg, looking for a space where I could sell on the street. To this day, I take my kids where I used to sell on the street to show them. That's where mommy used to sit. So I went there and I got a small space. For those who are familiar with downtown Johannesburg, you know how people sell on the street. You just sit, your tiny spot that you have, that's where you have. You can put maybe your table there, whatever you're selling. So I had this small table there. I was selling things like perfume, little accessories for ladies. And then at some point, I started selling food. But it just did not work in long term. While I was there on the streets of Johannesburg, I was listening to stories of other people selling on the street. And some people would tell me, I have been here for 5 years. I've been here for 10 years. I remember there was a guy who told me that he's been there for 15 years and it shocked me. I was like, oh my God, I don't see myself here that long. Even 5 years is scary. This for me is like a temporary thing while I figure out what to do. So many of the stories I heard scare me. Like, I was like, I cannot, this is not for me. But while I'm on the street, I'm doing the research that is making me discover about this new world of technology. So I'm learning about all of these things. But during the day, I will be on the street trying to hustle, trying to get what we put food on the table for the kids and all of that. And at some point, I was like, I think there's a better way I can still hustle and be able to focus more on the writing part and not have to come to town every day. Because going to the street every day, it was like another job that was yielding almost zero returns. That days you could be there and you don't sell anything. I was like, I need to find a better way. And I learned how to do beads, for those who know African beads, where you still do like fashion jewelries, but with beaded work. So I learned how to do that on YouTube. I saw a lady doing it in town, and she was selling them in town. So I learned from YouTube how to do that, and I used to do beads and sell them. So I would just design them for the neck. Most of them were like people doing traditional weddings. They would buy them. So I set up a Facebook page for that, and I set up an Instagram page for that. And then I was advertising. So someone would create, we see an order. I actually designed a few and I modeled them myself, you know. Some people have said I could be a model. So I went on a photo shoot and I did a few shoots myself and then I posted the pictures online. And then some people were saying like, hey, Nikki, I like this. Who did this? Or like me? Like, oh, how much? And it was really not much. At the time, I would sell like 500%, you know, 700% max. And I will have others for that. And I was like, okay, this is a better way of doing it. Instead of me going to the street every day, I can do this from home, right? So that was one way in which I survived, yeah, immediately when all of these happened, selling stuff online and putting food on the table while doing my research for the book.
Yeah. I can imagine being a mom and newly divorced and then this happened. Oh my gosh. Feel like things are just piling up at the same time.
I was barely ready for another knock. You know, I tell people it's like when you hit rock bottom. And you feel like you cannot go any lower. And then, boom, you realize that you could go lower because I hadn't even made sense of the divorce yet. I'm still lost. Like, how? Like, I didn't imagine my life would end here with two kids and on my own. So I'm still making sense of all of this and, boom, it was like an anniversary. Exactly 1 year later, I'm laid off from work. So it was a very dark moment in my life.
And how do you explain this to your kids? I'm trying to wrap my head around it. Mommy had a good office job. We had a car and things were good. And all of a sudden, mommy is hustling in town and now we don't have a car. How do you explain that to the kids?
I think they were too young to understand at the time. Maybe now they would ask questions like that because they're older. But at the time, my daughter was like three and a half, I think. My son was somewhere around seven. So kids, I think at that time, they were not really asking too many questions of what's going on as long as they still eat their food and had their lunchbox to take to school. So there wasn't really much explanation. Or maybe it could be my own negligence as a parent to explain to them why things are happening the way they are. But it just seemed like the kids were fine and life just carry on in a way.
Yeah. And you talk about, you know, having this idea to say, now I'm going to write this book. And there were moments where you disqualified yourself. And I think it's because you don't have a degree. You don't even know stuff about AI.
The most important one. Yeah. I don't have a technology background.
Yeah. Yeah. Yet you somehow found a way to qualify yourself. What was that process for you of qualifying yourself? Because I think a lot of us disqualify ourselves because we always think there's better until you realize that actually a lot of people don't know anything. So absolutely. How did you qualify yourself?
Wow. I like the way you put it. Qualify yourself. Oh, wow. Now you're making me go as a writer and as a creative. My mind is going to other places, but I will come back to the conversation about qualifying myself, which I didn't think I was qualifying myself anyway. But I just decided to to go online and even research about book writing, right? Why do people write books? Is there a need for a book? If you have these sort of ideas. And there is a particular person that I think that was like the final nail for me to like, okay, I'm going to do this. And I'm listening to this man, Miles Monroy. He's of late. He is no longer alive. But even then, he was no longer alive. But he had a workshop that he had done on book writing. And it was posted on YouTube. It was a two-hour workshop he'd done on book writing. And I sat and listened through the entire thing. He's talking about book writing, right? Because I'm trying to look for something to convince me to write a book. So when I sat down through that two-hour session, a dead man spoke to me because he was dead at that time. He spoke about everyone has a book in them. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what background you come from, what family you come from. Everyone has a book in them and everyone has a story in them. But it is up to you, the individual. Do you want to take this story and this book to your grave or do you want to give it into the world? This is me summarizing the two-hour workshop, right? That was all I got from it. There was so much he said in those 2 hours. But the summary for me and what hit me the most was that everyone has a book in them and it is your choice to decide, do you want to give this to the world or you want to take it to your grave? And I was like, no, I'm giving it to the world, right? So because I had always grown up with the mindset that things like writing a book is for special people and I didn't think I was special enough. So listening to someone that I had so much respect for say, yeah, everyone has a book in them. Yeah. I was like, oh yeah, everyone has a book in them. Yeah. So Nikki, you can do this. So that was part of me qualifying myself by researching about these things. And
You know, I'm curious to know where you think the idea of you're not good enough came from. Because I know with me, I could trace it back to my childhood and the kinds of things adults around me would say when I was a child. Where did that come from for you?
I think it also go back to childhood in a way, because when I look back growing up with my grandmom, I was not the child who was physically fit to do a whole lot of farming and things like that. So I was always told, oh, this one, oh God, how are you ever going to survive in the world? You are so weak, right? I know mentally I'm resilient and strong and my strength came from how I think and how I see the world in my creativity way. But in the sense of being physically strong to do like a lot of farm work, me growing up in the village, right? You're judged based on how much farming you can do, how much firewood you can carry on your head, how much water you can go to the stream and fetch and carry. I didn't have strength for any of those things. So grandma would throw words around like, oh, I don't know how you're going to survive in the world. You're so weak, you know? So there was always that thing of like, oh my God, how am I going to survive in the world? I'm not good enough. But more importantly, the idea of not being good enough came from the fact that I did not go through to university. I don't have a degree, you know, what makes so many people feel like, hey, I've got it. I didn't have that. So the disqualification of me disqualifying myself came from that, you know, the things I used to hear in childhood, like, oh, this one, she's too weak. I don't know how she's going to survive in the world. Then plus me lacking formal education in a way and just self-doubt, like, can you really do this? And then the big one, like I mentioned earlier, not having a technology background, like I was completely clueless about the world of technology. The only technology I knew prior to being retrained was that I would use a phone, make a call, use my laptop, work, send emails. That was it. There was nothing beyond that about technology that I knew. And now I'm sitting here and there's this idea to write a book about emerging technology. Like, what? Are you kidding, Nikki? Like, you don't qualify for this. So there's part of it that traced to childhood. There's part of it, lack of education. In a way, when I say education, I'm saying it in quotes because there are so many ways. Now I know there are so many ways to be educated, right? But back then I knew if you don't have a degree, you don't qualify for anything. So those are the three pillars for me: childhood, lack of a degree, and lack of a technology background that I disqualified myself. I said, no, I'm not doing this.
Yeah. Yet you have been able to teach yourself about technology. I mean, you are one of the leading voices and even female voices that we have on the entire continent that speaks about technology. Absolutely. If you guys don't know about Nikki, I'm talking directly to you. Please go check her out on LinkedIn and on YouTube. She really is impeccable in the stuff that she shares. And When I think about AI, I've got some mixed feelings. Listen, I'm pro AI. I want us to do stuff. But for people who don't know, what is AI?
You know, AI is, it is a system that mimics human activities. In to simplify that, right? There's so many definitions to this. And it is still evolving. People are still also discovering what is AI. But in simple terms, it is a system that mimics human activities, meaning that activities that we are only specially done by humans can now be done by these software machines, can now be done by these new systems that are coming up. So that is essentially AI in a nutshell.
Yeah. And when you say it's a system that can mimic human activities, and I think as pro technology as I am, one thing that consumes me the most is the knowledge that perhaps in the next 10 years or even less, we're going to have so many false narratives that are driven by AI. Absolutely. I think that comes from my journalistic mindset, knowing how dangerous false information can be. And I think we saw it a lot in the US, especially with the presidential elections, et cetera, and what could happen in AI. Yeah. And even when you look at it from an entertainment perspective, Drake had an entire song with Tupac. Right. And Tupac has been dead for decades. Yet he was able to put Tupac's voices in his song that he made in 2024. So all of that can become scary, especially when you think about how there can be a lot of bad actors in the world who are trying to do things for bad and not for good, and how scary that can be. So when I think about having children, I'm like, I don't know where we're going to put a brake on this AI thing, because it can be so good, but it can also be so bad.
Absolutely.
When you think about AI, what consumes your mind the most?
For me, I'm actually looking more on the positive side. I try, though I'm aware of, you know, where this could go wrong, but I'm looking more on the positive side. To go back to what you just mentioned, the misinformation, one of the things I tell people is learn the skill of skepticism. Learn how to be skeptical. I mean, it's going to be one of the big skills to learn in future. In the past, you see someone who is a doubter and a skeptic, you look at them like, come on. No. Now, in this age of AI, it's a skill everyone must learn. Take nothing at face value. Don't just believe anything. Don't just believe any call that you receive. Don't just believe any text message that comes into your phone. Don't just believe any email you receive in your inbox. Double check, triple check, and check again everything you receive. In fact, this could be AI speaking to you, not Nikki. You know, that's how bad it can get. So the skill of being skeptical is something that everyone must learn. So that people need to start understanding, we are living in an age that what used to exist in sci-fi movies is now our reality. So you have to be very, very careful. If your husband calls you, there's a likelihood it might not be him calling you, right? That is AI for you. So in one way, learning how to be skeptical in this age and time is very critical. Otherwise, so many people are going to suffer the consequences of believing things they see on the internet, things that come into their inbox, calls that people call promising them A, B, and C. Links that come into their inbox and they click on it, all of those things, right? Be skeptical so that it reduces your chances, you know, of being deceived by this new technology. And back to what comes to my mind when I see AI, I think more of opportunities. How can we leverage this? That is really my message and what I look more at. Because yes, this new technology is a double-edged sword, right? There are parts of it that are really amazing, and there are also parts of it that are really disturbing. But if we focus more on the parts that are negative or disturbing, how are you going to help yourself with that? It's just going to make you more and more miserable. So what I tell people is focus on what can actually empower you. Like someone asked the question, are many people asking the question, will AI steal my job? I'm like, yes. And then? That's the wrong question to ask, right? So the question you should be asking is, how do I leverage AI to stay relevant? How do I leverage AI so that I understand the basics of this technology to keep myself, even if you're not keeping your job, but you can stay relevant even without having a job. You can find other opportunities to do even without having a job, like myself. But if you focus more on the negative aspects of it or the disempowering aspect of it, oh, we are going to lose our jobs to AI. Yes, then what?
And that's
so I think that the key thing is the type of questions we are asking are critical. How we are looking at this technology is critical. If you focus more on the doomsday narrative, it leaves you paralyzed. But if you focus more on this is a tool I can use to empower myself, to empower my team, to empower my business, then you are on the right path.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And when you're talking about the caution, I think it's really critical. I remember how I've been scammed twice via WhatsApp. You know, when a friend sends you a message, I'm so desperate, please, please, please send me this money, I'm so desperate, only to discover that it wasn't them, their phones had been hacked. And you're like, what do you mean? Right. And those people sounded right. like you, and it was a text, and I had no reason to to think that it wasn't you. So that's really true that it can get really scary. And in this book, you talk about how people need to disrupt in order to not be disrupted, right?
Absolutely.
So let's do a case study of some sort. Say a young person now who is facing retrenchment in this moment, how would you say they disrupt or be disrupted?
Sometimes you find the answers on the way. You don't find the answers before you leave the house. You don't find the answers before you start whatever you are doing. Like in my case, many of the answers, I discover them on the way, right? So I say that to say, it's difficult to give exactly how it will play out for every person, right? But if someone is facing retrenchment, well, the only thing I can tell them is to hope that this leads down the path of something positive. Like they will always say, rejection leads to redirection. Like, hold on to those type of thoughts, right? Most likely, it may not play out the way you plan for it to play out. But one thing you can do is not lose hope. Once you've lost hope, then it becomes difficult for anyone to rescue you. Because in my case, yes, I came so close to losing hope, but I had to. I had to like, okay, the only thing I have at this point is hope, and I cannot afford to lose it. So for anyone facing retrenchment is to understand, one, things come and go. The only constant to life is change. You know, no one holds a job forever, except maybe in the days of our grandparents or our parents. You know, in this age and time, people are constantly evolving, jobs are constantly changing, people are constantly moving to one thing or the other. So there are two ways to look at it. You can look for another job, or this might be an opportunity for you to start chasing that dream you had all along. You know, in my case, I decided, okay, I'm going to explore the world and see what else was out there for me. The idea to go back when I lost my job, it wasn't even a question of go back looking for another job. Like, I was like, I don't even want to go through this anymore, because there's no guarantee that any job I get will be safe, you know. And the pain I just experienced, I was like, I don't want to ever feel like this again. So there are two ways to go about it. Either you go looking for another job, or you start chasing the dream.
Either you go looking for another job or you start chasing your dreams. Let's talk about how to disrupt yourself before tragedy comes knocking at the door.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how do people do that? Maybe let me give you a simple case study. I run a public relations company. How would you say people like myself who run service businesses of this nature should disrupt before they get disrupted? Because when I look at the work that we do, I see how we can quickly go off. For example, one of the big things that we do is content creation. And there's so many roles in content creation that are already being overtaken by AI. Mm-hmm. There's times where we would use transcribers, for example. Mm-hmm. We don't need those anymore. You pop in the video and an AI tool does it within 5 seconds.
Absolutely.
And so many other processes within the work that we do that are being taken by AI. Mm-hmm. How would you take somebody like myself who's running a service-based business through a masterclass of self-disruption before they get disrupted?
I would say she's trying to look for coaching for free.
Of course. And for every family member of Access Genie, they must all get coaching in this moment.
That's a brilliant question, by the way. And you answered it already. I mean, like, from what I'm hearing, you're already using the AI tools, because I was going to say, find the AI tools that are relevant to your industry and get plugged in. Otherwise, you're going to be left behind. So if you already have AI tools that can transcribe for you and you don't need transcribers, you're already disrupting yourself. You're already disrupting within the industry, right? So the best advice is not just within what you're doing. Anyone out there, find out, how is AI impacting my particular industry. In your case, it's PR. For some people, it's marketing. For some people, it's agriculture. For other people, it's healthcare, right? Irrespective of what industry you are, you need to ask the question, how is artificial intelligence disrupting my industry? When you ask that question, you are going to see the different ways in which artificial intelligence is disrupting your industry. I cannot sit here and give you all the ways in which it is disrupting healthcare. I can't give you all the ways it is disrupting agriculture. I cannot give you all the ways in which it is disrupting banking. But in case you are in banking, I mean, you are in the finance industry, then you start to ask the question, how is it impacting finance? And how do I, as an individual within finance, disrupt myself so that I stay relevant? So it differs from industry to industry and from profession to profession. But until people start asking the question, how is this technology impacting my industry? How is this technology impacting my field? Until you start asking that question, many people are going to be caught unaware.
Yeah.
And that is when they become disrupted.
Yeah.
Right. But the moment you ask the question, whatever happens after that is you disrupting yourself. For some people, they will need to go learn some new AI tools.
Yeah.
Find out, okay, this AI tool is beneficial for my industry. How do I use it? How do I implement it in my work? How do I implement it in my team? How do I use this to make sure I stay relevant? That is now you disrupting yourself and upskilling yourself. But for so many people, oh God, I'm going to have to talk about this. The people with the wheelbarrow mindset, right? I've given it in some of my talks. The wheelbarrow mindset means that those people that, you know what a wheelbarrow is, right? This thing where it can't move by itself. You have to push it. And if you push a wheelbarrow and leave it here, you come the next day, you find it exactly where you kept it. So there are people within the workplace or the world at large that are just like wheelbarrows. Someone has to push them. Their parents have to push them. Their partner has to push them. Their boss has to push them. And wherever the boss pushed them and left, the boss will come next year and find them exactly where they left them. They don't take initiative on their own. They don't ask questions. They are not curious about the world. They are not curious about how is the world changing? How is my industry changing? Those are people with wheelbarrow mindsets. And what are they? They are essentially wheelbarrows. So if you are a wheelbarrow, yeah, you are going to find yourself so disrupted that you will not even understand where to begin, right? So have the mindset that takes initiative, the mindset that is curious, that asks questions about these new technologies. How is the world changing? So the moment you're asking those questions, you are disrupting yourself. You are not waiting for someone to come and push you. For some people, they will have to wait till their boss says, oh, there is this new course. I'm thinking maybe you should take it up next year or in the next 6 months. What are your thoughts about it? And they'll be like, oh, boss, I'll think about it. No. It shouldn't be. It should be the other way around. It should be you. If you cannot upskill yourself out of pocket, it should then be you to go to your organization and say, this is 1, 2, 3 that I want to do. I feel you'll be relevant for the role in which I'm doing. Can the organization then sponsor me doing this? That is you disrupting yourself. But there are so many people that are not taking such initiatives.
Yeah.
And one key thing, many people are worried about being replaced by artificial intelligence. But the real worry should be that you humans, actual employees, are going to be replaced by those that are using artificial intelligence, not necessarily by artificial intelligence. So you sitting and worrying about, oh, I'm going to lose my job to AI. Your real competition is your colleague who is learning how to use AI. That is the person that is going to replace you. That's the person that's going to take over your position. But so many people are not thinking in that line, because if you are looking at your real competition directly, then you'll be forced to do something, right? But if you're looking at the software, you cannot see it, you cannot touch it. Can you and I touch AI? No, but I can see you, I can touch you, I can feel you. So if I realize that you are the actual competition, then I can wake up. But because this software, nobody can see it, nobody can really touch it, nobody can feel it. We are all scared of it, but nobody can really pinpoint and like, okay, this is it.
Yeah.
So many people are relaxed and be like, okay, there's no need for me to be in competition with AI, of course. And if you're in competition with AI, you will lose. Of course, you already know. Nobody can win it as a human being. So you actually, there's a saying, I tell people that if you fight the wrong battle and win, you're still a loser. So if you engage with AI and by some miracle you still win, you're a loser, because how is that even going to benefit you? So look at the person that is using AI and be like, oh, how is this person doing it? That's your competition. Your colleague using AI, how is this person using it? Your business competitor using AI, how is this person using it? That is your real competition, right? Instead of trying to compete with a machine, you cannot win. None of us can win this war against AI. We can't. It is to see how we can partner with it. That's the best we can do with AI. Partnership. Yeah. As a human, to you trying to overtake AI, you trying to be better than AI, it's not going to work.
Yeah. And from a business perspective, disruption will also really require innovation, right?
Absolutely.
Because obviously, say, for example, your service business is now so much easier because of AI. You might lose clients who can now automate all of this using AI and doing the work themselves in mm-hmm. internally. But I think it really provides an opportunity to be innovative, because if you work in a particular industry, you're an expert in that industry, and you can have the foresight to know what's coming and how to really play the game, right, and do it better in the space. So I agree with you heavily when you say it's a moment to disrupt, and your business will still survive because you are the expert. You need to know what's coming and how to still play a role and offer value, right, for a client. And when we're talking about offering value for clients from a business perspective, we always say when you're starting a business, start a business that can solve a problem or give value. Tell me why it's important for us to think about that, especially considering that AI is making so many things easier in the world today.
Absolutely. Before I get to that, you know, from the business perspective, there are some business leaders that have built their brand around employing so many people, right? Solving the problem of employment in our society today. And when there are certain AI tools that they need to implement to stay relevant, they push back on implementing those tools, because if they do implement this tool, they will have to let go of some people, right? This is one of the big conflicts for many businesses today. Like, I don't want to let go so-and-so. I don't want to retrench anyone. And so I would rather not use this technology. Instead of me implementing this technology and losing people along the line, I would rather not use it. And I remember talking to one guy when I was speaking at the GovTech conference in Durban. I had this particular conversation with someone who had an actual case. Like, we want to do this. There are certain tools we want to bring into the organization, but our whole business brand is built around solving the problem of unemployment in the country. And we have literally won some awards for that. How then do we bring these tools in that is going to get rid of the same people that we employed? And the response was this. This is the answer I gave, right? Which is what I'm going to give to any business who is in that type of conflict. There are only two ways this can go. Either you hold on to your people or you implement the technology. So when you implement the technology, you will stay in the market, but you will lose some people. Because your competitor is not going to think the way you are thinking. They are going to implement those technologies. They are going to be 10x faster than you in productivity, in everything, and they are going to kick you out of the market. Now, maybe if you implemented the technology, you would have lost 5 employees, or you would have had to lay off 5 or 10. Now, instead of laying off 5, the entire organization is going to go down. Because why? You are not able to compete in the market, because the direction the market is taking, you are not willing to take it. And before you know it, you're out of business and everyone loses their job. So the best way is to see, okay, how do I play this game of balance? Okay, someone needs to go, but we need to bring this so that we stay in business, right? So those are some of the conflicts that many businesses are having. And my best advice is find a balance. If you completely shut out technology, shut out artificial intelligence and said, no, we are going to bring in as many people as possible, you cannot compete with the people who are using artificial intelligence. And eventually you get kicked out of the market, right? To go back to the question of value that you were talking about, it is critical. Every business is based on value. What problem are you solving in society? If your business is not solving any problem, what really is the point of the business, right? And with artificial intelligence, it is to be able to help you provide that value faster, better, quicker, cheaper. That is the reason for technology tools. So things that would have cost a lot of money before now can cost half of that with artificial intelligence. Things that you would have needed maybe 50 employees for that, you can actually achieve that with maybe 25 employees, half of that workforce. Yeah. So that is how much it's helping to provide that value for less and for cheaper within the workforce today or within the business world today.
Yeah, you can be able to do that. Yeah. And for companies that are struggling, like the example you just gave, that had a whole brand that's centered around the number of employees they have, there's a lot of reinvention that will be required. And it's not only from a company perspective, even from an individual perspective, you also had to reinvent yourself from being a cropped girly to being a woman in tech. What key steps are important in that reinvention journey that would need to happen?
For any organization to implement new technologies, I think the key steps, they start small, they start slowly, because also people get scared when organizations just jump in with the technology without preparing the workforce, right? So it is critical that before any organization start implementing these technologies, they bring the workforce along, bring the people along, because at the end of the day, people are still very critical. So if many, there's so much about digital transformation that fails because the organization just went and bought state-of-the-art technology brought in, and everyone was confused, like this commotion, like, oh, what's going on? They have no idea what is happening because the people are left behind. If you're going to bring in a technology, for example, that solves customer service, people in customer service need to be part of that because the people at the top have no clue how customer service functions. And so if they're bringing in a technology or building a technology that solves the problem of customer service, without the people in the customer service, they are going to fail miserably because they have no clue. They have never really been in direct contact with the customers of the organization. Mm-hmm. So bringing people from the customer service to be part of this team or to be part of the new technology that is being brought into the customer service is the best way to do it. So that when it's implemented, the people in the customer service will feel like we were part of this. We built this together. We brought this together. But if the people at the top sit on their own and make decisions that will affect people on the ground, at the end of the day, it brings down the morale of the employees. So yes, you have this technology that can do 1, 2, 3, but the people that are supposed to also be working in partnership with this technology are completely demoralized. They feel, oh, this is coming to replace us. They feel, oh, I'm no longer needed. They feel I'm disposable. And when people are in that state of panic and fear, they cannot function at their best. So the best way is that every organization, when they are going through digital transformation or they have the mind to go through digital transformation, they do it along with the people. One of the mistakes that organizations do is that they outsource this completely. This technology is built somewhere else. No one in the organization knows what is happening. And these tech guys that are somewhere else, maybe sitting in China, come and implement this thing in the organization, and no one knows what is going on. So the best way is to work together with your team. Find people. What exact problem are you solving? For example, like I mentioned, if it's in customer service, people from the customer service should be part of the team building the technology that will solve your problem in the customer service, because they know the ins and out of how the clients behave, right? They know exactly the behavior within customer service.
Mm-hmm. And where are we, what's the state of AI from an African perspective? Because I know sometimes when we talk about these things, we talk a lot from a global perspective, but we're still living on a continent where there's some people who don't even have access to internet. One of our clients is in the broadband space, and even in a country like South Africa, there's cities and villages in South Africa that even don't have Wi-Fi or access today, right now. So what is the state and how should entrepreneurs think about this from an African perspective?
That's really a great question. I love that. To answer that question, let me share a quick story. I'm in Singapore. I just came back from Singapore 2 weeks ago. And I'm in a train. I got into the MTR. It was late in the afternoon, so at the time students are coming back from school. So the train that afternoon was full with students. So I'm listening in on the conversation these students are having. And the other student is saying, oh, AI is boring. Like, you know how students talk, right? And I'm sitting and I'm listening. Look at the type of conversations these students are having. He's talking about their AI teacher wanted them to do 1, 2, 3, and it's boring. Like, he doesn't want to even take the class. He will see what happens tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting and I'm listening. I'm like, this is quite fascinating. Mm-hmm. This is quite interesting. So AI is part of the curriculum in Singapore. Clearly, I mean, it's something that is clear. But for me being there and listening into this conversation, it is quite clear that students are being exposed to this from a very early age, right? And now when we come back to Africa, we know the curriculum is completely something opposite, right? Because for us to be prepared as a continent for this, we need to start early. We need to implement this in schools as soon as possible, right? But it is not yet happening. And so in that regard of the state of AI in Africa, of course, again, once again, there are two ways to that. There's a positive side, there's a negative side of it. The positive side in the sense that this new technology can offer so much to the continent. We can use this new technology to build things faster and cheaper, right? Meaning that we don't have the problem of legacy technologies that we have to get rid of to bring this in. We just need to bring in AI and solve many of the problems that the continent is blessed with. As my friend, Mr. Banks, Talifano Banks, would say, that the continent is blessed with problems. So there are so many of those problems that AI can be used to solve. So from an entrepreneurship perspective, is to for entrepreneurs to think, how do we deploy AI to solve many of the problems that the continent has? And it's a clean slate to start from. We don't have legacy technologies to get rid of. So for many entrepreneurs, for many creatives on the continent, this is the best time to be alive. What apps do we build to solve 1, 2, 3 problems that the continent has? And each country in Africa has their own problem, right? Their own unique problems. It's the best time to implement all of these things. As far as I'm concerned, I think that artificial intelligence is going to have the biggest impact in Africa. Because when it comes to innovation, I feel like the Western world is running out of things to innovate. Their lives are a bit too perfect. But in Africa, we have so many problems that the real innovation is happening here on the continent. And AI is going to be the technology that helps us go faster and 10x many of the problems, to solve many of the problems that we have on the continent. And when it comes to education, I believe that many entrepreneurs can build tools that will expose kids to AI from early age. And tools that will either force traditional education to partner with them or completely force them out, you know, kick them out of the market. That's my prayer, though. Yes, so those tools are there. Those opportunities are there when it comes to AI and on the continent. Yeah. I see more opportunities than problems, really. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, talking about it being introduced early on is critical, because we can talk about how much opportunities there on the continent, but the truth of the matter is that on that flip side, we're not equipped to do that. So I laugh a lot because I've been trying to start a new business, and then I ask my husband small little things about tech, like, oh, I can't do this, and then he's always laughing, oh, woman in AI. Because as much as I am exposed to stuff, and you know, I've got postgraduate degrees, I'm much higher than most of the continent in terms of access to information. Yeah. Yet I even still struggle with certain things around AI, because I don't think we are fostering an environment that is trying to push AI and is trying to push people to learn about AI and to have more conversations around AI enough on the continent. So I think it also has to go back to conversations.
Absolutely.
On a general level.
To speak on what you just mentioned about having to ask your husband for things around artificial intelligence, look at me. Like, I'm the face of disruption and technology and AI conversations, right? But ask me something on the technical aspects, and I'll be like, come on, like, hey, I'm that clueless. But the point is, the conversations are needed, right? When it comes to artificial intelligence, the technical aspects of it, there are people that are skilled for that. So if someone needs me to come and implement this particular tool within the organization, no, I'm not the person for you, okay? But if you need me to come and prepare your workforce on how to embrace this new tool you're bringing into your organization, yes, I'm the person to bring in to drive that conversation, to shift that mindset, because there's this mindset also with so many people that I'm not a tech person, right? Technology is not for me. I don't work in IT, so this does not concern me. People still have that type of mindset. So the work I do is not in the technical aspects of artificial intelligence, but it is to shift the mindset, to help people to embrace this technology within your organization, within your business. And just as a normal functioning human being in a tech-driven world, you need to embrace this technology. So the idea that you are not a tech person is outdated. Each and every one of us, I tell people, if you have a smartphone, you are a tech person. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is that simple. So for anyone to think, no, this is not for me because I'm not a tech person, that's the type of mindset that I'm trying to make sure it is completely out. Mm-hmm. We don't have the conversations like that. Because digital transformation, what it is doing, it is that it is breaking down these walls that exist even within organizations, where marketing stand on its own, finance stand on its own, right? Product development stand on its own. Now it is breaking those barriers, and there has to be some sort of unity and understanding within an organization thanks to digital transformation. And so I tell people, learn the basics of this technology. At least, to the very least, back to what I said earlier, learn how it is impacting your industry, your profession, so that you don't get left behind, right? So my desire is that no one gets left behind. But if people are still stuck with the mindset of, I'm not in tech, so this is not for me, you are essentially shooting yourself in the foot. You're doing a disservice to yourself. That type of mindset cannot cause you to ask questions, how is artificial intelligence impacting my industry? You will think, no, this is for IT guys. I'm not in IT, so it doesn't concern me. No, it does. It really does concern you, because you need to learn how to partner with the tools that will make you more productive, right? Because one person today can do the work of 10 people thanks to AI. Yeah. So why not embrace that? If it's something that will help you do the work you would have taken 5 days to do, you can do it in 2 days, in 2 hours, why not? Why not embrace that of speed, right? Because everything nice about speed, why not embrace that? And if you disqualify yourself by saying, I'm not a tech person, I used to be that person, I'm not a tech person. I almost didn't write a book because I thought, I'm not a tech person, right? So when I tell people like that, I'm essentially saying, hey, I'm the example here. I did this. Like, if there was anyone who should not even be talking about this, it's me, because I don't come from that background. But I realize you don't need a tech background to stay relevant. You don't need a tech background to embrace technology, because it is happening and it's happening now. So the earlier you realize that, oh, I need to do something and I need to do it quicker, get rid of that mindset that you're not a tech person and embrace it. Yeah. So again, I do not understand the technicalities of it, but I want to drive the conversation so that each and every person, the people who are understanding the technicalities of it, yes, they are doing their job. But for everyday people, that is the people I'm talking to. The everyday people, the people that feel like this is not for me, the people that feel like I don't qualify to even understand or talk about technology, that is the people I'm talking to. Like, hey, I did it. You too can do it.
You can do it too. Yeah. You know, in the book, you also talk about 25 business ideas. So if you were to give me now top 5 business ideas, somebody who is curious about the future and the role of AI, what kind of businesses would they start if you had to give me just 5 that they could start?
Wow. The world has evolved so much from the time the book was published up until now. But nonetheless, there's always so many ideas out there that people can do. I tell people, for example, what we're doing now, sitting here and having a conversation on a podcast, right? This is a business idea. There are people that are just gifted in talking. They are the life of the party. Wherever they go, people just gravitate towards them. I'm like, why not do that in using it to create content, right? And there's so many different ways in which you can create content. Well, I think one of the things I mentioned in the book is actually your ability to take what you already do naturally, just take it and digitize it. Meaning you're good at baking, open a channel and teach people how to bake. You're so good at cooking, get a channel and teach people. It could be a YouTube channel. Teach people these amazing recipes that maybe your grandma passed over to you. That's a business. Content is business, right? So those are some of the things that people can really jump on board. Like, naturally, you don't have to go to any school to learn this. You are a natural at this. For some, it's makeup. I mean, I look good, right? It's YouTube. Many of us are learning these things. So, and it's because someone decided, I'm going to take what I'm good at, which is I'm good at doing makeup. I'm going to teach others by doing it on makeup on YouTube, and eventually they monetize it. Before they know it, they're earning a living off YouTube, off Instagram, and all of that. So those are some natural things that you're natural at, that you can just take them and digitize it. When we talk about digital transformation, it's not just for corporate businesses. It is even for individuals, because so many of us are sitting on so much talent. So much talent, but no one knows about us. You could be the best thing since sliced bread, but if the world doesn't know you exist, what good does that do to you, right? So put yourself out there. Digitize yourself. Digitize your knowledge. Digitize your passion. I mean, that is the basic you can start. Now, when you put yourself out there, what it ends may not even be what you started with, right? Because we evolved. Ideas change. You may start with makeup and it ends up to be something else. You may start with fashion and it ends up to be something else. But the first thing is that you need to start by putting yourself in the digital space. If I were to Google your name today, what comes up? That's the question I ask people. And it has to make you think, what comes up if I were to Google your name today? Because whatever business you are going to do in this age and time has to be linked to the internet. If it doesn't exist on the internet, you are missing out on business. So the first thing is create a digital brand for yourself.
How does one do that?
By putting themselves out there. Now, some people on the internet, some people on social media, but they're using it wrongly. I mean, there are few people you find that you literally have to search to find people who are not on social media. But the thing is that many people are not using social media strategically, right? They're not using it as something that can benefit them. They're using it as something to check out the latest gossip, the latest celebrity gossip, the letters on whatever is happening in their school or who is posting a fight. I mean, people are not using it intentionally because each and every one of us, many, are on social media, but we're not using it strategically. So the best way to put yourself is to like, okay, what is it you're passionate about? Okay, let me be more practical here. Let's say someone is selling baby clothing, right? And their Facebook account, nobody knows this person is in the business of baby clothing or baby food or whatever they're selling, right? Nobody knows about it, but they have a social media account. You go there, maybe the thing they do is just to post a random picture of themselves. Nothing beyond that. So my advice would be go on the internet, start posting, start providing value to new moms. Start writing content around how first-time pregnancy works, for example. Start providing value about first-time mothers who are breastfeeding for the first time, you know, and write things around that because now you're not directly providing content around baby clothing or baby food, but you are pulling the people that will eventually become mothers towards you by writing content around pregnancy, around breastfeeding, around new babies and all of that. That is, for me, the most practical way in which you can create a brand for yourself online. For example, you are in PR. If I were to go on your social media, which I know you're doing a great job, by the way, but for some people, they will not post anything about PR. You wouldn't even know what industry they are in until you talk to them face to face. So if I go on your social media and I'm still clueless about what you are doing, until I talk to you face to face, you are not yet digitizing yourself. For example, a guy inboxed me something on Facebook a few months ago that he's a graphic designer and he sent like some examples of the things he designs, trying to work with me, of course. So I opened the inbox, I saw the message and I clicked on his profile to go check what type of designs does he do. Though, yeah, he sent me a few, but let me see more of his portfolio on his social media account. Now, when I opened his profile, one, there is no photo of himself. It is the logo of his business on the Facebook page. Already I'm like, where's the human behind this? I'm a human being. I want to get connected with a human being. Secondly, there is nothing on his profile that shows that this person is a graphic designer. Nothing. Just post random pictures of cards and share things that other people are sharing. Just when something is trending, people just click share. Those are the type of things on his profile. And immediately I was turned off because there was no need to respond to that inbox. There was no need to go further because there's nothing on his profile that shows this person is really a graphic designer. I'm not even saying he's lying. He's probably a very good graphic designer, but nothing in the digital space shows that he's a graphic designer. And in the world we are living today, no one is going to employ you without first checking what is it that you do online. So your digital DNA has to be in alignment with what you're doing. What are your passions? They have to align with the DNA you're living on the digital landscape. But so many people are missing out on that. They're doing their things and keeping them on their computers. No one knows about them till you have a face-to-face conversation with them. And for many people, we're not going to be willing to have that face-to-face conversation. Sell us as soon as I land on your page. Yeah. So that when I'm coming to you, I have an idea already who you are, what you do, what your work looks like. Mm-hmm. The conversation becomes easier from there. Yeah. So that those are the practical ways of, even if you're a mechanic, for example, you're fixing cars, go on your profile, give people the DIYs of what they can do with their cars, right? Teach them little things about cars. Teach them how to clean their cars, the way to do it so that it looks like it was done professionally. Just little things. Now, as a mechanic, when your car breaks down, the first person that will come to their mind is, oh, this person has been providing me so much value about my car. Let me call them and see if they can fix this. But you see someone is doing, having the knowledge and the talent to fix cars. No one knows how good they are in cars, you know? Yeah.
And as you're speaking, I'm reminded of a conversation I had with my friends a couple of weeks ago. On TikTok, there was this big trend about Onezwa saying Nara Smith stole her ideas, et cetera, et cetera. And the big conversation that we're having was, why TikTok isn't paying South African creators who are creating content. And one of the things that we spoke about was that a thing?
Sorry to interrupt. They don't pay South African creators?
Yes. TikTok doesn't pay South African creators. We don't get any money from TikTok as a creator in South Africa. And it's such a pain point because South Africans rule TikTok globally in terms of the amount of content that's created and the number of people who live on TikTok and the amount of time South Africans spend on TikTok, right? So I was looking at this discrepancy and like wondering why is it that we're not being afforded the opportunity to earn? When you look at YouTube, we earn from YouTube, but we also get very little compared to Europeans and Americans. Yeah. And that I can sort of understand in terms of advertising perspective, right? Our economy is smaller, the population is smaller, so advertising opportunities are smaller, our rand is weaker, et cetera, which can limit. Fine, you can argue that. But with TikTok, I found that the biggest issue is because there are no brands or voices on TikTok, meaning people are just creating TikToks for fun. You can't place them. So even when I'm looking at it from a PR perspective, if a client comes to me and says, find me somebody on TikTok who can educate around finances. For example, I'll say FNB can come and say, want to teach people financial education on TikTok. Find me somebody who's fit and worthy to do that on TikTok. You'll be hard-pressed to find someone with the millions of views or hundreds or thousands of followers who can do that because people on TikTok are just creating fun TikToks. Right. Like, we're just here for fun and for vibes. And I'm like, that's something that's so difficult to monetize and create value because from a branding perspective, you have to find somebody who fits that role. Mm. So when you're talking about building a digital persona and transforming your brand online, I think that's also something that's critical to think about. If I can look at your brand and I can't place you, I can't monetize the brand because I can't place you. Who comes to you and how do you actually earn money? And then there are creators that have their niches, like Onezwa, for example, has been cooking in this discussion. There are some that have those niches who are doing well and, you know, starting to grow. But for TikTok to come and say, let's actually share profit and money with those people, they need to be enough people to actually create content that brings in money to do that. So that's how I thought around this conversation on why perhaps TikTok doesn't pay, because at the end of the day, all of those companies are also in it to make money. It needs to end up making financial sense. So even from personal brands, what you're saying is very, very critical. Mm-hmm. You need to think of yourself as a business and decide what kind of business you are to be able to actually do that and to be able to grow. This conversation has been absolutely incredible. Listen, I don't even want it to end, so I hope we can have you another time again. But before we end this conversation, we like to play what we call Fast Five. That's where I ask you five quick questions that you can answer in a word, in a sentence, or in a phrase. Anything you feel like doing. Are you ready?
Okay.
So, question one, if you were to start a new business today, what business would it be in and why?
I think I would still do what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I love what I do.
Just because you love what you do.
Yeah.
And if you were to advise someone who's looking to start a digitally savvy business, a futuristic business today, what business would you advise they start?
I would say look for something around AI. Start something around AI.
They should start something around AI. Yeah. And if somebody is in a rut at this moment and they're trying to disrupt themselves, what's the one thing that you'd say they do outside of just looking at AI, the one first thing that they have to do to take themselves out of a rut that's specifically depression, for example?
Is to ask themselves, what can I give the world? What is in me that I can give the world? And for many people, they think if you don't have money, you have nothing to give to the world. But there's always something to give to the world.
There's always something to give to the world. You're a mom of two. What advice would you give to mothers today who are raising children who are going to live in an even much more different world than we live in today?
Oh, my God. When you feel like you're failing in your own role as a mom, it's hard to give advice to moms. I think it's to be there for your kids. And to give them the things you did not have. And these don't have to be physical things. You know, it is to the mindset, because we're living in a world where the kids are being presented with so much conflicting information through the media, through schools. So if you as a parent are not impacting in them what is right, what is wrong, then essentially the kids are being raised by the government, which is through school, or they're being raised by the media, which is either through television or through YouTube, right? For example, there's something I quickly correct with my daughter when I see on TV. Like, I have a daughter. For example, this thing where there's a movie, and most people don't see any harm in that, like where a girl gets mad at a boy and takes a glass of wine and pours it on him. Like, it's on so many movies, right? And I'll be like, hey, you see that? It never happens in real life. If you ever had a disagreement with your husband, your boyfriend, or whoever you'll be dating in future, you do not do that to a person in public, right? So I'm trying to correct that so that she knows, even though she's seen this a million times on TV, it's not okay. It's not the right thing for the girl. That's not how conflict is resolved.
Yeah. Yeah. And finally, what is the best lesson that you think somebody who gets this book would learn?
I think the best lesson is to know that you are the architect of your own destiny.
You write your own story. Write your own story.
You decide your own path. Mm. That's why the title is Disrupt Yourself. Many of us know how to disrupt others. We know how to disrupt the government. We know how to disrupt our bosses when it comes to us. So, yeah.
Learning that, you heard it right here from Nikki Verd. She is a coach. If you haven't read about her, please go and visit her website, www.nikkiverd.com. Grab a book that's available on Amazon and multiple online platforms, as well as bookstores, and check her YouTube out. This woman has over 177,000 YouTube subscribers. People who are there are gaining a lot of knowledge and a lot of information. And to our studio partner right here in Sharon Lee Photographers, Garlo, thank you so much. We're giving away 15% off if you want to shoot here, create your own podcast, do a photo shoot, whatever it is that you'd want a studio for, please use the discount code that's on your screens right now. Until next time. We'll